it wasn't really until I left home at 18 to go to uni and the structure came out my life that then drugs and alcohol kind of came in as my structure. They became my support system to help me try and manage that anxiety. And I still at that point in time was on a mission. Well, I mean, I was early, I guess, in my mission to banish anxiety from my life. I believed that I was going to be able to escape it. And so I was addicted to anything that held that promise. So, you know, from cannabis to drugs to alcohol to spirituality. I read The Power of Now when I was, I think, 17. And from that moment on, I was like I really felt something. I had some really deep insights in that moment, but I became addicted to spirituality. You know, I was reading anything and everything you could imagine. So, and that carried on through my 20s. You know, I backpacked around India searching for the answer. I did all the cliche stuff. I trained to be a yoga teacher. I sat in ashrams. I did, you know, retreats and all this kind of stuff. And I was learning all these lovely spiritual ideas. And some of it was kind of landing, but honestly, I was still running away from my anxiety. I still wanted to try and get away from it.
Välkommen till podden Human Change med Daniel Magnusson. Fastnar du ofta i tankar kring oro, stress och irritation? Tror du att allt beror på att det är fel på dig? Då vill jag välkomna dig till podden som guidar dig till förståelse om hur vi människor fungerar egentligen. Genom denna förståelse kan vi leva ett liv fullt av kärlek och harmoni. Ditt ljus och hopp när allt verkar mörkt och hopplöst. Så låt nu Daniel guida dig till den stillhet vi alla letar efter. Där slutstationen är välmående och glädje. Lyssna och njut.
Välkommen till Human Change med mig, Daniel Magnusson. Or I maybe should say it in English. Welcome to Human Change with me, Daniel Magnusson. And today I have a guest. It's Sam Goldfinch. And I met Sam... I listened to him and saw him in a week during a Zoom education coach three principles training during a weekend with Jamie Smart in I think was he like in February or something or March. Anyhow, Sam shared his story and also how his life changed a little bit with the understanding of the three principles that is that's coming from Sydney Banks and working a lot with addiction. And I thought that's an always interesting topic, and I want to just have Sam here on the show, and now you're here, so I'm really happy to have you here, Sam. Welcome.
Yeah, glad to be here, man. Thanks for having me. And I just love podcast conversations. They're like they really light me up, so I was really excited when you sent the email and asked me on.
Yeah, perfect. So except for showing up at that training with Jamie Smart and sharing your story and also having a podcast as you do, what's the name of the podcast again?
So the podcast is with my friend Ellie. It's called Present and Sober. And we talk about the whole presence piece, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a bit today, and the kind of, you know, spirituality three principles stuff. And then we also talk about the kind of sobriety alcohol free element as well. And how those two things kind of flow into each other.
So you're having your podcast, and then you're also working as a coach and educator.
I have my fingers in a few pies, you might say. I do a few things. So I spend a lot of time coaching in the alcohol-free space, and I'm really passionate about that because I have a personal history of addiction, so that's always going to be close to my heart. And then I tend to work with people in kind of post-addiction growth as well, so they kind of get to the point where they're like, yeah, okay, like I really genuinely feel free. This is amazing, but I feel like there's more to explore. I want to meet myself again. Perhaps they want to create something new in their life, and so that's always really exciting to me as well. And then I also work a lot in the, like I said, you know, the kind of spirituality space, although that word's a bit sticky, but I'm sure a lot of your listeners being aware of the three P's and will kind of know the direction that I'm looking in with that. But I always, everything that I do with people, I want it to be ruthlessly practical. I don't want it to just be kind of nice ideas. I really want it to help people. So yeah, I'm just super passionate about people waking up to that, that rebel spirit that we all have, and shedding those old layers that we don't want to be ruled by anymore. Mm. And just getting closer and closer to that life we've always dreamed of.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So what would you say when you mean rebel spirit? What does that mean for you?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I guess there's different words for this. Some people might call it wisdom, who you really are. To me, I like call it rebel spirit because it looks to me that that space in us is, well, it doesn't follow rules. You know, wisdom doesn't follow rules. And it looks to me that it kind of, so I'll give you an example. You know, we meet that person, that our boss or whatever, and we always say that thing. We say that thing we've always said, or we do that thing we've always done. And there's that piece in us. There's that voice that's like, you want to say no, or you want to, like, you can hear wisdom. You can hear the real you beneath it kind of communicating with you. But we, for whatever reason, we feel like we can't break that programming, or we're scared of the repercussions or what. And I'm really passionate to kind of help people tune into that voice. And sometimes it literally is a voice. Sometimes it's a feeling. Sometimes it's any number of things. And for me, through my kind of wonky relationship with alcohol and other substances, that voice was always there. Like, sometimes it was quiet, sometimes it was loud. And it wasn't really until I started to break all the rules I'd set for myself that I started to live an authentic life. And that just looks like the secret sauce to me. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to kind of tear our whole life down and start again, but it does look to me that most of the things that we have running around in our head that tell us it has to be that way, it should be that way, I've always done it that way, that stuff, it's not always guiding us to our kind of authentic desire, to our kind of purpose, and why we might be here.
Yeah, interesting. And it's refreshing with a new name on it, Rebel Spirit. And also regarding spirituality, I think, as you say, it can be sticky, and it's so, people have so much different kind of associations with it. And for me, it's like, yeah, it's something that is formless.
Yeah,
right? That's some kind of energy, right? And but I think we all know that there is something inside of us living, right?
Yeah.
Not a parasite.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hopefully, I mean, you know, hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Yeah.
It looks to me that yeah, you're right. Like, no one gets away with not being dialed into that. Just the fact that we exist means that we have access to that space of creativity. And the cool thing about it is that it's kind of adaptogenic. So like one, if we need it to be creative, it will come in that form, and other times it comes as deep love, and other times it comes as peace, and other times it comes as joy. And it looks like those kinds of feelings that come from the inside, that are uncaused, that are unconditional, they do not require a condition, they're just our natural state when we fall out of our thinking and fall into that state, those states, that stuff is just so helpful. It's so helpful, and we need less, not more. I think so many of us, we think we need to learn some more information so that we can crack that, or, oh, I can't start that until I've, you know, done all these things and taken all these courses. And actually, a lot of the time, it's all there waiting for us. It's all there waiting for us. There's a time for the intellect, and there's a time for learning and all of that stuff. But there's also this other space. It kind of, like you said, spirituality is a bit sticky. And I, the reason I say that is I think for some people it can represent, you know, going to yoga and burning incense, which is great. And I think that's amazing. Like, all power to people like that. I've done that many times in my life, but it also looks like spirituality is tapping into creativity when we're at work. It looks like rebel spirit is showing up. What I mean by that is it's just meeting life as it is, like a child with new eyes. You're not bringing conditioning in, you're not bringing programming in. And to some extent, like, we're always on a journey with that, because obviously there's a whole bunch of stuff that's invisible, you know, there's all sorts of stuff in the unconscious. But I think we know, we kind of get the flavor of when we're meeting life anew, because it feels like anything feels possible. Like we feel like we can take the world on. We think about the people in our life and we're filled with love and joy. We're kind of not caught on the in the past and the future. We're exactly where we are, like in the moment. And when we're not there and we're caught up in our conditioning, in our programming, like there's a different feeling to it. So I really want to simplify it for people. I want people to kind of just be able to sense more into, well, when am I coming from spirit? And when am I just caught innocently, right? And when we see it, we see it. And when we don't, we don't. But just knowing afterwards, like perhaps we fall into that kind of conversation with our partner or something. And we fall into victimhood, or we fall into kind of persecutor role or whatever, like to just recognize that afterwards and just know the flavor of it. The awareness seems to just have this magical effect on life. And over time, we get less caught and we just get to hang out way more in the moment. And just kind of, we don't have to have an idea of how something's going to go. We don't have to worry that, you know, we just know that we've got a whole wealth of resources that are available to us. And we don't have to do anything in order to keep hold of them. And we can't get rid of them. they're actually there, no matter what mistakes we make and all of the rest of it. They're there. You know, like Sid would say, it's all one thought away at the end of the day. And as soon as that kind of drops away, then we enter back into that space of just creativity or love or peace or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And just seeing that it's always there, even if it feels like we lost it or it got damaged or whatever, just to see that that's not true, it can be so helpful. I'm guessing when we in some sense feel like we lose touch with it, or we feel and believe also at the same time that it's damaged in some sense, and we look outside and we want to like rebuild it or heal it or get in touch with it, we come up with different kind of strategies to that we believe is needed. And that's how I see addiction. It's so easy to fall into these different kind of strategies because we the emotions in us and the state we end up in when we do stuff seems like it coming from the outside with different kind of activities and substances and so on. So
yeah,
your story, how did it look before you because you said you had some challenges with addiction before and
yeah, man. Well, look, it's a really interesting point you make, because it looks to me that the behaviors that we have, the addictive behaviors that we may have, they're a symptom. They're not the disease. They're kind of symptomatic of a misunderstanding, which is that we need to medicate ourselves against feelings or experiences ultimately. And I think there are so many different flavors of that. And mine for sure was, I mean, I was an anxious kid, but I can remember my first memory of school.
So were you a kid who had anxious thoughts and feelings?
Here's the thing, right? So I would frame it as like, here's the thing. It's important because that's what I was going to say, is that I was an anxious kid, right? That's the way it was my identity. That's how I described myself. And back then, I just didn't get that. No, that's not who you are. It's just that sometimes, as you put it, man, that
exactly.
I just feel anxiety, right?
And I pointed it out just because I didn't know where you're gonna go, but it's because I just want to point it out, especially for the listeners now, because that's so important to see, right?
Big time.
That we are not that's our behavior or that is created with our thoughts and different kind of feelings. But it's so easy that we put labels on ourselves and others.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that person is ADHD or ADD or anxious or what do you say? Shy, all these kind of words, right? So yeah, sorry. I just
you know, it's true, but it's true, man, because we can kind of innocently lock that stuff in without even meaning to. So I, you know, I have a diagnosis of ADHD. I definitely experienced a lot of anxiety. Now, it's interesting because those things ebb and flow, but yeah, it was, they were very intense experiences in my life. So when I was sort of 11 or 12, I had really quite strong OCD. I struggled to read many books because in my kind of thought world, there were going to be repercussions because of the themes of the book. There was all sorts of kind of mad stuff going on in my head. And I didn't have the language for that. I didn't know how to talk to anyone about it. And I kind of stumbled into alcohol really young. I was about 12. And I think the perceived benefit for me was that it just shut up the voice in my head just for a minute and allowed me to just sort of, okay, like you can be a teenager for a minute. So although I would not have said it in this way, it became a helpful tool for me. But obviously quite quickly I became quite dependent on it in that way. Now I was really lucky because my parents, you know, really great people, love me to pieces, absolutely tried their best. And there was a lot of love in my household. So there was structure. So as much as I was drinking at every available opportunity and social events and those kinds of things, I was still going to school and all that kind of stuff. It wasn't really until I left home at 18 to go to uni and the structure came out my life that then drugs and alcohol kind of came in as my structure. They became my support system to help me try and manage that anxiety. And I still at that point in time was on a mission. Well, I mean, I was early, I guess, in my mission to banish anxiety from my life. I believed that I was going to be able to escape it. And so I was addicted to anything that held that promise. So, you know, from cannabis to drugs to alcohol to spirituality. I read The Power of Now when I was, I think, 17. And from that moment on, I was like I really felt something. I had some really deep insights in that moment, but I became addicted to spirituality. You know, I was reading anything and everything you could imagine. So, and that carried on through my 20s. You know, I backpacked around India searching for the answer. I did all the cliche stuff. I trained to be a yoga teacher. I sat in ashrams. I did, you know, retreats and all this kind of stuff. And I was learning all these lovely spiritual ideas. And some of it was kind of landing, but honestly, I was still running away from my anxiety. I still wanted to try and get away from it. And alcohol was something that had appeared to be helpful, but then there was huge cost to it. By the time I was 26, it was, the writing was on the wall. It was very clear that I needed to stop. And I was drinking, you know, heavy amounts every day. And it was, you know, it wasn't good. It wasn't good for me on any level. And then probably the most profound thing, the thing that the principles brought to me, or that Sid's teachings brought, that I knew in terms of an idea, but it hadn't landed for me yet, was that no, anxiety is just fine. Like it's not, the problem is not anxiety. The problem is that you have been believing that you can't sit with it, that you can't allow it to flow through you and move through. I don't think I quite believed it was transient, sort of, even though I'd go around saying, yeah, nothing's permanent, but actually I wasn't quite there. And then I couldn't tell you exactly when or what had happened. It was good few years ago now. I was really touched by that. And I started to realize, oh, you don't need to run from this, man. I realized in that moment, exactly like you said, you're not an anxious guy. You just get anxious every now and again. And the most interesting thing about that was, then I stopped getting anxious about my anxiety. And I think that's what many of us do. We get anxious about the fact we might get anxious. We end up in anxiety loops. Now, the moment we stop worrying about that, and we just like, it's going to be okay. Sometimes I'm going to be sad. Sometimes I'll be anxious. Like there's an ebb and a flow. This is part of the human experience. I just stopped generating. It makes sense, right? Because there's no reason to generate anxiety about anxiety anymore. And I started to settle and I was already alcohol free at that point. I mean, I've been alcohol free for 7 years now. So pretty young. I was 26 when I started the journey, about 28 when I kind of cracked it, I would say. And that was a real journey. But in terms of layers of freedom, the deepest freedom that I've ever really found was in and around my relationship to my, yeah, to how our experience is being created. And the more I see how it's always inside out, that it can't be any other way, no exceptions, the easier life gets. And yeah, now I'm kind of, it just all looks beautiful to me. I know that there are times in life where I'm going to be filled with joy and awe and beauty, and it's happening a lot. And there are also going to be times in my life where I'm going to grieve, where I'm going to lose people that I love, because no one goes through life and doesn't have those experiences. And actually, we're not supposed to. Like, they might not be comfortable, they might be difficult and challenging at times, but that doesn't make them any less beautiful, doesn't make them any less human, and it doesn't make them negative. Like, to me, there's no such thing as positive and negative emotions. There's just this array of beautiful stuff that can move through our special effects department. So that's where I work with people a lot in terms of addiction. Lots of people would think, well, the goal's just to stop drinking, Sam. Like, if I could just get a year under my belt, then I'll be okay. But it looks to me that it's not. Like, if I were to wave a magic wand for anyone and stop them drinking or overeating or whatever, but their thoughts and the kind of patterning that they had remained the same, someone would very quickly see, oh yeah, that's not going to be it. Like, I want to be free. I want to get to a point where I'm like, yeah, I don't have to do that. I'm actually free. My life is better than it used to be with substances in it, right? And that looks really possible to me. But the route to that looks like insights into the nature of experience and who we really are. It doesn't look like it all circles around understanding alcohol and all those kinds of stuff. As much as that can be very helpful, the spiritual kind of soul journey behind it looks really, really key to me.
Yeah. And it's such a big, I don't know if big is the right word, but very different view on addiction compared to what you hear day to day.
Sure.
And
we could talk about that for hours, man. Because the how things have always been done, you know, it's. Yeah, sorry, I cut you off.
No, I'm just thinking, because it's at the same time, it's understandable that it is the way it is and the view is as it is, because that's what we've been learned, how it works. Yeah. And people genuinely believes it needs to be in a certain way because they see some kind of effects of it. So what's your take on that with all the, I don't know if it's stigma maybe around addiction, like once an addict, you always will be it, like always an alcoholic, always an alcoholic.
Well, this
once
is
an alcoholic, or what do you say? I don't know.
this is once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. That kind of language. This is a juicy topic. We could hang out here all day. So I'll try and be succinct.
Welcome to part 32.
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. So when I first started my personal coaching business a while back, I called it Sober Rebellion. And the reason I did that is because I wanted to take back the word. Because if you look at the word sober in the dictionary, it's kind of gray, dull, boring. And to me, that's just not true. It's the total opposite of that. And I think the way that it's often been done, and look, this is it absolutely is not my role to tell people what they should or shouldn't do, where they should find their freedom and all that kind of stuff. And I definitely don't want to, you know, go and attack sort of 12 steps or AA or any of that kind of stuff. But I knew it wasn't for me. Like, I just knew I wasn't going to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I knew I wasn't going to call myself an alcoholic, even though I would have, by anyone's definition, fit the bill as such. Mm-hmm. Someone would have been like, yeah, he's one of those. But it didn't look useful to me. In the same way that I don't want to say I'm an anxious person, I don't want to say I am an alcoholic. Like, that it may be useful for some people as a transit, like a transition thing, but as an identity, it doesn't look helpful to me. And it also, if you think about addiction, it's a spectrum, right? Addiction in itself is not really a thing. Like, one person would say they're addicted. Someone else would be like, God, I'd love to drink like you. Someone else would say, you know, someone might say that they're addicted if they go out on a Friday night, but they can't enjoy a night without alcohol. Someone else would say that's dependency. A psychiatrist might say it only categorizes as an addiction once it starts to have a negative impact on your personal life, mm-hmm. but it's got nothing about how much you're drinking, right? Even though someone might be drinking loads, but they deem it not to have a negative impact on their life, so they might not be addicted. So if you think about smoking or cocaine, we don't have cocaineaholics, we don't have cigaretteaholics, right? We have people that are sort of different places on the addiction spectrum. And we have a different story for alcohol. We have a story that says there's a group of people that are alcoholics, and we have a group of people who can just drink with impunity. Like, they don't have to worry, they can do whatever they want. And that us them thing is dangerous, because there's a whole bunch of people in the middle who are slowly slipping into that. Oh, but I'm not an alcoholic, I'm not one of them. But they've really problematic drinking, right? But they don't want to, there's shame around it, there's stigma, as you say. Mm-hmm. And I personally, I don't think it's helping people. So for me, I'm all about just like when we spoke about wisdom, it's like breaking all of that apart and getting people to ask themselves, is this helping me? Like, am I living my best life? Is alcohol taking more than it's giving? Like, I honestly have no desire to demonize alcohol or to, I've worked with people who want to learn to moderate and things like that. I have no opinion about what people should or shouldn't do in terms of substances. I personally have had a lot of healing through psychedelic therapy and different, like, it doesn't look to me that there's such a thing as a good or a bad substance. They're, it's just whether they work for us in our life. So I have no opinion on that. Where I find it difficult is where people are told, no, you have to say that you're that. Like, I've had a number of people reach out to me and say, man, you really need to get yourself to a meeting because you're in denial. Like, you can't, because I think the level of freedom that I'm talking about is outside their zone of reference. It doesn't look real. They've kind of built a wall between them and the substance, which is based on fear. And they keep it at distance, and they may have made their life smaller. And the idea that there is actually true freedom, it kind of doesn't compute. And so they kind of throw, and I've had a lot of people send me messages like that. And so be it, because I have to speak from the heart. And again, I know there's a lot of people that have got a huge amount from the community and the kind of more traditional kind of escaping addiction kind of culture. And I think that's beautiful, but there's a whole host of people now who are actually ready to let these things go, but there isn't a narrative, there isn't something that they feel like they can genuinely buy into. And to me, there's no need to have shame. You know, these things are addictive substances, right? Alcohol is addictive. Cocaine is addictive. If you think about it, alcohol is the only drug you have to defend not taking. You know, you tell your friends that you're not going to drink, and a bunch of people, oh, come on, man. When was the last time somebody said, oh, I've stopped smoking crack? And someone was like, oh, you boring bastard. Why don't you start smoking crack again? Like, how are we ever going to have fun? Like, it doesn't happen. So we have a wonky story. So I don't think we're ever going to live in an alcohol-free world or anything like that. That's not my fight. What I want is for people to realize that if you are struggling in any way, if you feel like you're losing your power and that something else is in charge, it doesn't matter what it is, there is a way to find true freedom from that. And, you know, I know from talking to, we had Jamie on the podcast a while back, and he has his own experience of addiction. And he actually went through AA and 12 steps, but he says things that you don't often hear. He says things like, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I recovered from alcoholism. What most people will say is, I'm in recovery.
Yeah.
Well, when does that stop? When have you recovered? Like, are you going to get a message on your deathbed? Like, well done, you did it. Like, it looks like no, there's got to be another way. And the moment that falls away, like if you're not drinking anymore or not using anymore or whatever, and you feel free and you're loving your life and you're full of just all of those feelings that we were talking about earlier, job done. job done, as it looks to me. Mm. And yeah, I'm just passionate about getting that out there in whatever way possible.
Mm. Like a gravestone. Here is a recovering alcoholic, yeah. Resting.
Yeah, well, dude, I had a lady on a call yesterday. She said to me, Sam, I wanted to check with you. She was something like 70 odd days alcohol free, which by many, many people's standards, they'd be like, oh, that's not very long. And like, it depends 70, what you're comparing. 70, right? 70, it depends 70. What you're comparing it to. Some people would say, you know, you absolutely don't have any kind of sobriety until you've got a year. But it doesn't look like it's about time for me. It looks like it's a measure of freedom. There are people out there that haven't drunk for 10 years who are miserable. Mm-hmm. Who still feel trapped. Yeah. And there are people like myself who 6 months in were like, oh my God, like this is the best thing that ever happened to me. Right. And this lady was asking me, am I getting ahead of myself? And I sort of said to her, well, if you were in this moment to know that you were never going to drink again and that you were going to live a beautiful life and everything was going to be okay, you know, how would you know that? And she said, well, it could only be a feeling, couldn't it? I said, there you go. So what else can you go on? What else can you go on? And yeah, like, I know I can stand here and say, I know I'm never going to drink again. I feel incredible. It just makes no sense for me to do that. And I'm not going to wait around for the postcard, like you say, because it ain't coming.
Mm. Yeah. And it's interesting. And I, it's so funny, as you say, with, how you need to defend why you're not drinking. And I would say it says more about the people who ask you to drink than about you for not drinking. It's interesting to have this conversation because on back on the wall, it's a diploma. I'm educated in sommelier and been in the wine industry.
Sure.
And enjoy drinking wine and beer. I love beer. But in December, I have no problems to share this and never shared it on the podcast, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to do it now instead. I was out celebrating my brother with my wife and some friends 3 years later from his 40th birthday. So it was a little bit late. Yeah. But anyway, the day after, I was feeling I had such a bad hangover. And it was not the first time I had a hangover, but it was something different in this time. Mm-hmm. And this time I was like, yeah, I think I need to stop. I don't want to feel like this anymore. Mm. And I was like, yeah. In some sense, I decided that day that I'm not going to drink anymore. And anymore, I don't know how long anymore going to be.
Sure. Right?
And so I did. Yeah, I just decided, why I want to, but I feel like I never had a problem in that sense, like, mm-hmm. I need to drink or anything. I enjoy drinking a beer or a glass of wine during weekends and stuff like that. But now it's like, yeah, I don't have any desire for it. And I do drink a lot of alcoholic free beer because I love the taste of beer, but in the sense of need of drinking or drinking wine, I don't feel it anymore. And it's really strange because before it was hard for me to even see that.
Yeah. Well, dude, I love that you've shared that. It takes courage to share stuff like that. I think that's really cool. And the more stories we have of people who aren't the kind of Hollywood alcoholic stuff.
Yeah.
And actually they're just saying, do you know what? I decided to take a year off of alcohol to figure out what was going on in my life. And then I decided to drink a lot less. And somebody else will say, I just like you, man, I just had this moment that really was completely unexpected where I realized, yeah, I don't want to feel like this. And suddenly it stopped making sense in the same way. And I think I think that's beautiful. And I like I said, I think one of the problems is that in a rigid way of doing something, that kind of stuff is like, it's not accepted. So so something I like to offer to people is freedom in installments. So people will often come along and they think they need to go for never drinking again. And they have this idea of forever in their head. And no one experiences forever. We just experience the present moment, right? Yeah. Forever is a concept. Yeah. Just scare the shit out of yourself with it. Yeah. And so so saying to someone, look, have a 30-day break, see how you feel. If you go back to drinking, nothing lost. If you then realize you go back to where you were. Now, in a lot of sort of other ways of stopping drinking, they're like, oh, you can't be recommending that, man. That's super dangerous and all these. And we all have to find our own way of doing it. But that was my way out. My way out was got to a point just like you. I hadn't read any books or done any of that stuff. And I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to take a month off. So I took a month off. And then I went back. I was like, I've learned my lesson for sure. You know, within not that long, it was back to how it was before. And then I started having a few months off and then a few months back on. And in the end, I kind of realized I've evolved beyond it. I don't want it anymore. And no judgment. I have no judgment for anyone. I say to people, anything you've done, I've done it. Trust me. It's not about that for me. But it's remarkable, man, how many people come into the world that we're in, you know, the three principles world, and start to realize that feelings like, so it looks like alcohol might be able to provide somebody with pleasure or whatever, but that's very different to joy. Like playing around with your neurotransmitters in terms of pouring alcohol into you or whatever, there's a real big difference between pleasure and joy. It looks like joy is uncaused. It comes from us. It comes from the soul. Mm-hmm. And there are those feelings. Alcohol can't give us those feelings. And for me, to realize that not only are those things on tap, haha, to use a pun, but those things are available, right? I didn't mean to do that, shocking. But not only are they always there and available, but they are actually, it makes no sense for me now to use any number of the drugs and substances I used to use to try and give myself pleasure, because I've got so much just joy in my life. I've got so much peace. And I don't want to take away from that. So, and that just looks like that looks like liberation to me, which is different to fixation. Mm-hmm. Fixation looks like constantly thinking about not drinking, or, you know, your whole life revolves around not drinking. Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't sound fun.
Yeah.
So good for you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I'm laughing because it's like, yeah, don't think of a pink elephant. It's like, yeah. Oh, that's the only thing I'm going to think of. Yeah. And So struggling to stop with something by trying and forcing not to think about it is actually creating me, in that case, thinking about it even more. And the funny thing with this one is that I don't think about it. I have no interest in wine. This weekend, my wife her niece was here and was like, yeah, they had some dinner and they want to, do we have a red wine? And I went down to the, I actually have a wine fridge, but it's most like groceries in it.
It's the overflow.
Yeah, exactly. but a couple of bottles of wine and I brought a bottle. And we got it from a friend who is really good with wines, and we know it's quite nice wine. And I was like, yeah. So, but you can taste it, but have a glass. And I said, yeah, but I don't want to, but I get that definitely tasted. So I tasted it, spit it out, and it was so good. Excuse my Swedish. God damn, that was good wine. Right. But that was enough. I should have a glass of wine. I felt like, yeah, now I tasted it good. But I don't have that longing for drinking or drinking a glass of wine. And that is really strange compared to how it has been before. Like, oh, enjoying a dinner with good wine. Yeah, that can be good, but I don't have any thoughts about it. And suddenly, when I don't have any thoughts about it, I don't have an urge for it.
Yeah.
But beer, though. Well, but still, I'm not thinking, oh, I want a strong alcoholic beer, or I'm totally fine with an alcohol-free beer, even if it's not really alcohol-free, 0.5 sometimes, but also sometimes 0.0. But that's the most amazing thing, I believe. Like, I don't have any thoughts about it.
Yeah, well, that's amazing, man. And I mean, so alcohol-free beer is an interesting example. So I drink alcohol-free beer, right? And it doesn't make me want to go and get drunk or any of that. I get to drink it. I enjoy the taste. It means I don't have to enjoy drink something sweet, like Coke or mm-hmm. something I don't really want to drink. And because I'm already relaxed and enjoying myself, and because I love socializing so much, there's just nothing about that that makes me go, I want to drink alcohol. Now, in a lot of other ways of stopping, that's a big no-no. Like, you can't go near an alcohol-free beer because it would trigger you to do that. And I'm not saying that for some people it can't do that, but it looks like if someone is truly not trying to get intoxicated, if they're drinking that alcohol-free beer, you know, for whatever reason, for whatever their personal reason is, but they're not trying to replace alcohol with it, it's very unlikely to cause a problem. If someone deeply wants that thing to be alcohol and they're trying to replace it, it's not that. It's not that. So it can potentially be problematic. So they're the kinds of things that I want to work with people on to understand, because, like, if you imagine an iceberg, and at the top of the iceberg is your drinking, right? So is that all of the things that you can see in your life, the hangovers, the potential arguments that you've kept having, like whatever it happens to be for someone, that's the stuff you can see. So logically, that's the stuff you're going to try and tackle or change. So you're like, okay, I'll try and take the drinking away. If I could just not drink for long enough, or if I could drink less of it, if I could try and control all of those factors, then everything would be okay. But under the water level of the iceberg is all of the reasons why it makes sense for someone to drink. And if you don't take those away, it doesn't matter what you're working on up top. You just need willpower. Mm-hmm. And the only way that you find true freedom where you don't need willpower, where you're not white knuckling, is when you start, those reasons for drinking start to fall away. So I don't know what you saw, and who knows what the future holds, right? But whatever insight you had and whatever realizations people have, it's totally possible for someone to realize, I don't have to run from my anxiety. And suddenly their relationship to alcohol completely changes, or somebody wakes up to the truth that they're in an abusive relationship and they're like, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. And they leave. And suddenly, as where alcohol had actually been a way of them pulling their kind of thoughts down and not having to face the truth, suddenly it stops making sense for them to do that. And very much with Jamie here. So Jamie talks a lot about how very often when people want to come into the kind of the world of stopping drinking, they want the sobriety coach to gang up on the drinking side and kind of like go all like hardcore and just gang up on the alcohol so that we can get rid of it. But actually, sometimes it's not always the best way. Like, we're doing what makes sense to us with the level of understanding we've got. And as a teenager, alcohol was a tool for me. I didn't have anything else. I would not go back in time and tear that bottle out of my hand. I just wouldn't do it. It doesn't seem like a kindness. And over my life, as my level of understanding has increased, and as yours have, different things now make sense to you and different things make sense to me. And that's a real message of hope, man, because there will be people, I imagine, listening who maybe they've had a wonky relationship or an addiction, however they want to talk about it, for 10 years or something. They think they're never going to solve it, but that's not true. That's not true. But actually, the courage is sometimes in looking away from all of the stuff you can see and looking in a different direction. You know, what do you feel like alcohol's giving you? How is it serving you? Be brave enough to write that list down, because there's that. If it looks to you that it's, if the, you're like, yeah, I use it to relax, I use it to socialize, I use it to, well, all of those things are completely possible without alcohol. Completely possible without alcohol. So a lot of people often look at the bad side. They're like, they've got a really long list of all the stuff that alcohol is destroying, mm-hmm. but they're not looking at all of the benefits they think it gives them. And there's gold in there. There's gold in there. And you don't have to, this isn't about stopping. This is not about, like I said, I am not flying the flag for everybody to be alcohol free or sober. But if you would like to rebalance your relationship with it, some courage in looking in that direction can be very powerful as well. Yeah, I love that you shared that, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, thank you. And regarding feelings, what became true for me, I don't know when, but before this moment, that we miss is I have believed that the feeling that I have inside of me is going to damage me.
Yeah, exactly, man.
Going to, in some sense, hurt me and making a wound. But when we start to see that that is impossible, and I had a conversation, and I usually use this as an example, like if you have a stone in your shoe, what does that tell you? The feeling in the foot that you experience, what does that tell you? I have a stone in the foot, exactly. But the feeling of it, is that hurting your foot? No, the stone does, exactly, right? And in the same with the feeling of anxiety or worrying or anger or, I don't know, any so-called negative feeling, if we're going to use so-called, that we experience is just a signal to us. It can't hurt us. What will hurt us is holding on to it for a very long time, because it's creating a stress response in our body and so on. And that is not so healthy to have over a long period of time. But the feeling in itself, it is, as you said, it's transient, and it doesn't hurt us. It can't, but it feels hurting.
Yeah, you know, we're built for that. We're wired to be able to deal with acute stress and all those things. That's not the problem. As you say, it's holding on to it. And I think for many people, we've been it's like if you had a beach ball and you're holding it underwater and there's that pressure. Mm-hmm. And like you kind of use alcohol as an extra hand to keep those feelings down or whatever. And I think people are worried that if it comes up, they're like, I don't know if I can cope with that. Like, am I going to stop crying? Am I going to be okay? Am I going to make it out the other side? And the truth, and I know you really know this, but I can remember being struck by, that feelings are safe. They're all safe. They might not be comfortable, but they're safe. And very often we've been scaring ourselves with what we believe, with the concept of what we believe the experience of feeling it will be like. Mm-hmm. And then when we actually experience it, when we actually feel it, it isn't what we think it's going to be.
Yeah.
We realize, wow, I'm built for this. I'm built for this. You don't have to look in nature to see that there are animals all around us that are in stress all the time, but what they're not doing is going back to the burrow and then, you know, going over it again and again and again for the next 15 years and retelling the story and then having more stress and then not sleeping and like all these things, you know, it's innocent, but we're doing that to ourselves, and we don't have to do that. Mm. And the moment we realize, like, oh, I don't have to do that. So if feelings come, I can just feel them. Like my favorite thing to do is lie on the floor like a starfish. Literally, I make myself like physically vulnerable, and I just breathe, and I feel stuff. And that's amazing. As where before, I would have gone straight for beer or a spliff or whatever, right? Now now that doesn't make sense to me. Now it does. I think that we're in a society that trains us into that. It trains us to run away. And it helps it because it can sell stuff or say, oh, we've got a solution for that. But actually, the emotional intelligence that's starting to grow and what people are understanding and learning is that it's all safe. It's all safe. And you, exactly what you said, man, who you really are underneath all of it, it's just not possible. It's formless, like you say. Like, you can't, it's not made of time, space, or matter. So it's pure consciousness. So it can't be taken from, it can't be, it's whole. Mm-hmm. It can only be whole. And yeah, that's it, man, isn't it? Like, ultimately, that's the, any insight in that realm will change someone's life forever. Like Sid used to say, you know, you realize one spiritual fact and it will change your life forever. Mm. And yeah, so I don't really know what else to say.
and just understanding also, that has been helpful for me is to see that you just said, and then also that the feeling, any kind of feeling I have, is coming from me and not from the outside, even if I believe so in the moment, but knowing down deep that that's not true.
Yeah.
And suddenly that releases a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Releases a lot of, I don't know, feeling out of control in that sense, like, oh, I don't have control. It's other people controlling how I feel and so on. But now it's like, no, they don't have any control over it. And neither do I. Either, right? I'm just feeling, but I don't need to have control over it in that sense. So when someone, I want to have more control over your feelings, I'm thinking, good luck, right? But I totally understand why we believe that we need to have control over our feelings, or we need to find coping strategies and so on. But when we start to see the true nature of it and that we don't need it, it's life-changing. And also the funny thing for me with this experience regarding alcohol, and my wife would say, like, yeah, you always go 100% into things, right? When I do stuff, right? If I'm inspired, I need to say. But I also see that anything is possible regarding anything, regarding this. It could be any other kind of coping strategies that I might have that maybe I'm aware of or not aware of. But if I become aware of them, suddenly that can be released too, right?
Well, I love it, man. The fact that we live in a thought with a capital T generated experience means that the moment any of that shifts for us, or like in our personal reality tunnel, effectively our experience, our reality changes, right? There's that amazing, the opening line in the Missing Link, where Sid's, what does Sid say? There are those in the world that believe miracles do not happen. I can assure such skeptics that they do, with hope and faith as beacons, anything can happen. Hmm. And Sid, he wasn't saying, you know, you can turn water into wine or anything.
No.
What he was saying was, you live in a thought-generated universe. You're not feeling the world, you're feeling thought. That can change in any moment. You can be in an addiction, right? And then a second later, it's gone. One insight. You can, like, and I see it again and again and again for people. And that's amazing. That's amazing. Like, it's so hopeful. It's so beautiful.
It gives hope. It gives hope. And I think that is missing in today's so-called treatment industry. Of course, it can give hope that people going to different kind of institutions and meetings and so on. Not saying about that, and see hope that they see other people getting out of addiction and so on.
You got it.
But definitely just different to hear that well, you need to live with this rest of your life. And if you're really down in the bottom, struggling not to take a drink, that is not hopeful.
Yeah.
That would like, yeah, why are you kicking at me when I'm laying down, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing to anyone listening who may feel like they're there or that they're struggling. There's a whole world of experience that you wouldn't believe how beautiful it is, and you can access it too. And there's a way to that. There's a way to that. And no matter how long you've been struggling or how difficult it's been, you can get to that place. You're already there.
Yeah.
Up for some thinking.
Mm. And with that said, it's also important to build to say, like, yeah, if you've really been deep into the my bad Swedish again, in the shit,
yeah,
it's going to, of course, have withdrawal effects and sure, all that. So of course it's like, yeah, oh, so if I'm taking heroin today and then I get an insight and everything will be happy and jolly, no, of course you have gonna have probably some withdrawal effects
and,
on,
I mean,
it, but that's a start, right?
Yeah, it's worth, I mean, this is the thing, it's that, yes, and you know, there, to anybody who's worried that they may need any kind of medical assistance or anything, they go and get it checked with your medical professional, right? Of the people who are addicted, it's a small percentage of people who are in that bracket, but go get yourself checked out. Like, there's absolutely no harm in that, right? And also know that a lot of the things that you've believed to be true about what, for example, stopping drinking might be like, or the kind of physiological effects, the withdrawal, it's still a thought-generated experience. So if we stop adding layers of suffering to the experience and we're just with the sensations in the body and we know that it's safe, we very often have a very different experience than when we're innocently adding layers and layers of extra thought on top of it. So yes, 100%. You know, it's one of those things, you know, we have a body, we have, like, it's we want to go and make sure that we're looking after it and doing things safely. But also know that there are millions of people who move out of addiction every single year. And there are millions of different examples of the experiences that they have. And if you really see what freedom is going to be like, it's possible to move through, you know, a drug leaving the body or something like that with equanimity. It might not be comfortable, like we said, but we can be at peace as it's happening. And actually, there have been moments in my life where I've known that the feeling of that thing leaving my body, I've actually felt joy as it happened as well. Because I'm like, I can't believe I don't have to do this anymore.
Mm.
I don't have, this is like, this is this thing releasing from me. So yeah, like, it's multifaceted, man. But it's a good point you bring up. And yeah, just the power of hope, the power of knowing that you've got everything that you need, and reaching out and asking for help as well is really powerful. Like, if I were going to go back and say anything to myself, I don't know if I'd be ready to hear it. Probably not. I would have just said, yeah, get help a bit earlier, man. Like, actually talk to someone.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And always know you actually have the power to choose, even if we don't believe it sometimes. It feels like, and that's the thing with addiction, it doesn't matter what it is, it's an addiction when we feel that we don't have the power to choose, right? Then
exactly,
we're really stuck in it. But we always have the power, but we need to see deeper into it to see that we have the power also. But just be assured that you have. So it's been a lovely conversation, and also, like, sometimes people, like, I don't know if you said it was vulnerable, but that was a word that came up, and it was like, yeah, but is it vulnerable? It's only vulnerable if I'm believing I can be hurt.
I'll see. So,
yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I don't see I see vulnerability as a, it's interesting you pick up on that. To me, it's a positive thing. Like, yeah, to me, vulnerability is a part of strength. The ability to be able to, be vulnerable and share and be open and heartfelt to me is very powerful. So yeah, I hear you exactly. It would only be seen as a negative if we honestly think that vulnerability is going to break us, right?
Yeah, and also my take on vulnerability is, I will only experience I am being vulnerable if I'm believing I'm going to be hurt. But if I'm not believing that I'm going to be hurt, then it's not vulnerability. It's just authenticity or something, or just sharing. And in this case, I have no problem to share. So anyway, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, this lovely conversation. If people want to reach out to you, Sam, what's the best way?
Yeah, so the podcast is Present and Sober. We're on all of the normal podcast channels. But if you go to, if people want to find out about my stuff, I've tried to make it easy. If you go to Sam Goldfinch, so GoldFinch, samgoldfinch.com, it's like a holding page, and on it, you can click to the Present and Sober podcast. You can click to my stuff. You can click to all the different bits I'm going on, because I'm a bit, I get a bit excited, and I like creating things. So I've tried to keep it simple for people.
One stop shop. That's good. Yeah. Perfect. Awesome, and I will all, of course, link the information to the webpage and also to the podcast and so on into the show notes.
Awesome. And if people want to contact me, that it's all there. They just go there. In fact, you can email sam@samgoldfinch.com and just ping me an email. Like that's fine. I'm always happy to receive emails from people if they're looking for some help or some direction or whatever. So I love that chat. I really love the questions you ask. They're very, really insightful and really interesting. And I have a feeling we could carry on talking for hours.
Probably. So thank you very much for that. And what, if you're going to send some last words to the listeners, what would you say?
Trust yourself. Trust you. There is a guidance system in you that is on your side. It has your back. And sometimes you might be like, what? Really? Is that really what it's telling me? But actually, yeah, you can trust that, as it looks to me. You can trust that. So I would, and then in my life, the more I've learned to trust that over my intellect, and there's a time and a place for the intellect for sure, but the more I've learned to trust that space, the more easeful and beautiful life has become. So I just love everybody to know that you have that. We all have that. It's actually the same in all of us. we all get access to that. So, Tune into it.
Tack för att du har lyssnat på det här avsnittet. Är det så att du uppskattar den här podcasten, så får du självklart dela den vidare till dem du tänker kan ha ett behov av att lyssna på den. Det finns också en möjlighet för dig att boka in sig på ett kostnadsfritt coachingsamtal med mig. Det finns inga förbehåll att du måste ha tankar om att bli coachad, utan du kanske har en frågeställning, bara så här, det här skulle vara intressant att bolla med Daniel. Så kan jag hjälpa dig på något sätt, så gör jag det mer än gärna. Skicka frågan till mig på daniel@humanchange.se. På hemsidan hittar du även videokursen Nyckeln till stressfrihet. Det är en videokurs som jag tillsammans med Danielika Almqvist har skapat, och det är ett program då för dig som vill ha ett stressfriare liv. Och några vanliga effekter som man kan se efter det här är då minskad stress, oro, frustration och psykisk ohälsa, ett ökat lugn, välbefinnande, sinnesro med mera. Tack!